Yes, St. Paddy's Day. In a moment, we're going to bring in Dr. Christian von Laer with us, noted author, by the way, and nationally recognized master clairvoyant, medium, psychic. All of his works, of course, on his website, which you can find linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Let me give you a little bit more background on Dr. Christian von Laer. Again, I mentioned he's a master clairvoyant, medium, psychic. And he, of course, is renowned for his true eyes-open viewing ability into the aura. Some of his books, If You Could Only See, A Gnome Story, Seeing and Sensing Gnomes, The Magic of Gnomes and Leprechauns, and The Magical Powers and Mystical Beings. Christian, back on Coast to Coast. Great time to have you back, Christian, by the way. How are you?
I'm very, very well, George. How are you? Happy St. Patrick's Day, by the way.
You too. You too.
This is becoming a tradition, isn't it?
I saw people dressed in green all day today, and I'm saying, I wonder if they're celebrating. I wonder if they knew really what's going on with St. Paddy's Day. Most don't.
Just the fact that they're wearing green is a sort of a cause for celebration. You know, leprechauns are green. Their energy is sort of green and gold. Green is the energy of the earth. Even without people on it, it would be green. We just don't tend to see it. And so green tends to be a wellness, health color, energy. So we all vibrate better to that on St. Patrick's Day.
What do you think leprechauns are? Because I do believe that they exist, but I don't know if they're dimensional or just little people.
Well, there are many kinds of life. We're only a physical being, but there's more life than ours. And so one form of life is nature's spirits. They're here in the physical, only they're etheric, meaning they're a little bit above the vibration that we tend to see, very much akin to angels. Leprechauns, however, are unique, George. Leprechauns are the only form of life, and there are, again, thousands technically, but it's the only form of life that exists partially in the physical existence, that this is our reality, the physical, but they also exist in the astral plane, the other side, where we go to at night when we sleep, for example. And because of that, they get to use the ways and means of the physical world and of the astral world. And by doing that, they do things that we tend to think are magic, but yet it's normal for them.
Hollywood has kind of made leprechauns somewhat evil, Christian. Are they evil in reality?
Actually, they almost cannot be, but of course, Hollywood will do anything to create an adventure, right? But
right.
They do tend to be a little bit sometimes childish, sometimes
a little mischievous,
that type of thing. But believe it or not, there's an end game with all that. They're actually trying to persuade people to do something or to take recognition of things, and we may call this synchronicity or coincidences, but they're trying to draw their attention to matters which will help people get back on their path in life. And it's a broad kind of path. It's what our existence is supposed to be about. Because leprechauns are very old, of the kinds of nature spirits, they tend to live a couple thousand years. They've actually known us in more than one lifetime, and they also get to see us on the other side. No other nature people does. Since they're in the astral plane, they even see us over there, like when we're dreaming. So they sort of have the big idea, the big plan for us, so there's no better kind of life form other than ours that can contribute to the happiness and wellness and love and harmony that we've been looking for in life.
I always thought that leprechauns might be extraterrestrial. Not so?
No, they're not. They're actually extraterrestrials are legitimate beings on their own. And clairvoyantly, even if I did this on stage where we had an audience, they would see this too. We can actually see the inference of alien life because people that are starseeds, for example, have to have a guide from the place they came from. So we'll actually see that. But no, nature spirits are actually on the path of evolution closer to humans. They're just not where we are yet. So they're still in our physical realm. ETs and alien life will tend to be like us, but just in a different place.
The luck of the leprechauns, how did that originate, Christian?
Well, first of all, the fact that they can function in the astral plane, as you just mentioned, allows them to make things happen that we couldn't make happen. And so because they tend to be supportive of humans, since they see our dreams and our wishes and our desires, and they try to get us to make those happen, they tend to do things that happen just at the right time. First of all, they're telepathic, so they can read our minds and they know where we're thinking, so they know where we're at. And they can also do that with other people. So if what we have going on for us is a good thing, like we're concerned about mom getting a job or dad finding someone, anything that's usually not selfish. They will tend to consider that a wish, and they will try to bring that about. But because they make things happen so quickly, we call that magic or granting wishes or things like that. But this occurred or started way back when Europe was not formed in different countries like they are now.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it was one big country. And technically, it would be around the area of Scandinavia, the Finland, Sweden, those areas. And even the older books will mention these things in a subtle way. But all life on this earth basically had a starting physical location. And the nature spirits tend to come from that place because it was more conducive for their kind of life when the world was earlier evolving.
How did they originate, or seem to be, in Ireland?
Well, of course, that is over there in that European area, the Germanic area, which mm-hmm. would be Switzerland, Ireland, Scotland, that whole area. When they migrated out of the Scandinavian areas, or the people migrated, they sort of went with them. But, you know, back then, a long time ago, we were more willing to believe and open to the ways of nature, right? Because we didn't have doctors like we do now. We didn't have science like we do now. And so when they wished or prayed, they would get answers. But also they could see things because their eyes would be more willing to see nature spirits. We're actually conditioned to not see them now. It's either easier to see than anything, but anything spiritual, I should say. But we're conditioned to not see them. So they would have been a commonplace element of life in the past. And so Europe, too, I mean, like England, it wasn't just the Germanic areas, also embraced them and considered them a valid part of life. And so when they tried to make things happen, like let's say it was health or finding a relationship, things like that, they opened up to these other natures or forces of God, so to speak, and they were answered by nature spirits, and particularly leprechauns, since they're the more magical of the beings.
That area seems to be so laden with superstition in mythology, Christian, about luck, the four-leaf clover, the pot of gold, all those things. How come?
Well, if we go back, we have to untranslate some of the stories. Like the pot of gold, for example, I mentioned, I think, when we opened that the leprechauns are green, but they're green and gold. That's because they also embrace the energy from that other realm we call the astral plane, the other side.
Yeah.
It's just a normal place. We just don't tend to see it ourselves, but we do go there when we sleep at night. Since they function there, and that's considered the gold world, a clairvoyant sees everything there in some hue, some sepia hue of gold, just like they see this world in green. And so when they manifest something, if it's something we would consider magical, there will tend to be that astral hue around it or that gold hue around it. Now, in the past, in those olden times, of course, since the classes were so differentiated, there were five or six people that had money, kings, for example, and then everybody else was the working class, right? So they were looking for success and improvements to the life. And so those would be answers, and there would be a gold hue around those things. And so they come up with this concept of a pot of gold. Because, for example, coins may be something they were looking for. Now, leprechauns, as with all nature spirits, do like metal, and they infuse, actually, metal with magical abilities and powers. Basically, their vibrations, their thoughts will be in them. Gold is a very, very good conductor. So in some cases, it would literally be the gold. Another one would be copper, by the way, although we see that more associated with gnomes. But gold has been a precious mineral since the dawn of time, right, everywhere. But most people don't realize that metals actually can convey or hold, retain information and messages. So in addition to giving the person gold for success or so they had money to buy what they needed in life, there was actually something they would imbue from it that would be imbued in that they could get just by holding the gold.
Are you still doing some television shows?
Haven't done it in about a year. They've pretty much run their course. I am doing a lot of touring this year, though.
Oh, yeah. Where are you going?
Well, all the major cities, of course, you know, the Bostons, the New York, the Ohio's, Chicago's, and I'll be doing a lot of speaking this time. Normally, I'm just doing the readings, but I'm getting back in the speaking mold. We're talking about life in other realms, nature spirits, of course, extraterrestrial life, or alien life, I would call it, nature of existence, and even finding your soulmate.
Can anything go wrong with this belief system in leprechauns or anything like that?
Well, I think the concern would come if we take it out of context. Is if we just think of leprechauns as some strange or unique thing to believe in out there, perhaps we will go astray because we will tend to imagine. But technically, leprechauns and gnomes, fairies, even extraterrestrials. They're just life consistent with the plan that we're on. We're all sort of doing the same thing, but at just at different stages of evolution, so to speak. Now, we tend to naturally fear the unknown, but since 2012, the world should be becoming much more aware. We've just seen too many things. We've developed better abilities. We know that there's more things out there that are truthful going on than what people say are the truth, and people are having experiences and starting to share them. And it's important that we have these other experiences like the ancients did, as you mentioned earlier, because it's hard to get through life just being mental as we are now.
How do you find a leprechaun? How do you tap into one?
Well, you know, that's one of the things that we espoused in some of our earlier books, especially on seeing and sensing them. Since we found that nature spirits tend to vibrate to particular colors, depending on the type of nature spirits, like I mentioned, that leprechauns vibrate to the frequencies of the range of green and the range of gold, by putting those colored lights out, usually in a tree, since that would be nature, that vibration matches their energy, so they will be drawn to it. And that happens usually very quickly. It's a little bit easier, though, to draw gnomes, which are the colors red and green, because they tend to be a little younger, more childlike, and more playful, so they will more readily, within a day or so, start being attracted to the green and gold lights. But it takes about 2 weeks to eventually start drawing leprechauns if you haven't done it before.
Christian, the leprechauns, of course, originating in that area that we just talked about, but can you also find them in the United States, Canada?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and leprechauns, again, are one kind of nature spirit. There's certainly fairies and elves and brownies and gnomes, as we've already alluded to. And they all exist everywhere because there was an original purpose to nature spirits that we don't see at the moment. But they're the reason we have the formation of metals and minerals, and so they're considered to be of the mineral kingdom. For example, gold doesn't just happen, or silver doesn't just happen, iron doesn't just happen. It takes billions of years to have things, the molecules of them, the atoms of them, induced to create that unique variation of an element that we're going to call gold, for example. And so they tend to had to have built up the minerals of the earth for billions of years before life could even be there. And by having a world full of minerals like we have now, and thanks to the nature spirits, then we were able to have plant life, right? We had to have minerals before we could have plant life. And water, by the way, water is considered of the minerals. So once we had the mineral life, or minerals, I should say, and plants, then life could the life that could come in would be animal life. And we needed all three of those before humans could come in. So nature spirits are part and parcel to the whole plan of existence, and they continue to do that now, some of the ones first coming in. But the ones that have done the work I've already mentioned have evolved somewhat, and so they become what we call people. And so that's why now I tend to call them nature people as opposed to just spirits, since they start taking on a kind of identity like we have. Mm-hmm. Life everywhere in the universe, George, is human-esque of some sort, right? Even ETs or aliens are still human-esque to some degree, right? With arms, legs, a head, thinking, communication abilities. So all life is trying to evolve to that point, even if it started as a rock at one time. We're trying to get there. So nature spirits, particularly leprechauns, all have a purpose. The advantage that leprechauns have over others is they can influence other people like us, since they can communicate with us telepathically. They put thoughts in our head and read them, and they lay things around, and they draw butterflies to us and to let us know something's going on, or we find pennies or silver dimes, right? So they are, in a way, communicating with us, but they're trying to help us get where we need to be, because eventually we have to evolve beyond this physical world too, right? And we'll go on and be something else, and then they will inherit the earth.
How tall are they, Christian?
In America, I didn't answer that from your first question. In America, they're around usually 12 to 18 inches, probably closer to the 18 inches like elves. But just like goldfish can vary their size depending on the container that they're in, nature spirits around the world will tend to adapt or adopt the environment that's around them. That's why in Australia, for example, some fairies can be 6 foot tall, but yet in America, they're closer to 6 inches. So here, they tend to be about 18 inches, but when we see those that come from the Scandinavia area in some parts of the Germanic countries, they will be taller, like 24 to 36 inches, and they will have totally different characteristics than we tend to depict them as in America. You know, the greener felt hats and the black belts and whatever. For example, the older ones from Scandinavia can be very whitish looking and very, very long eyes, long rounded eyes, that tend to look a lot like what we call grays in alien life, which may be why some people do confuse them with alien life.
Do they talk to us?
Well, of course, they talk like all life talks, but it doesn't mean they talk the way we do, because they don't have the physical matter to create the vocal cord sounds that we do. So they talk just like we do in their environment, but for us to perceive them, we will normally perceive their thinking, and so we call that telepathic. Because they think in simple words, simple sentences, simple structure, just like a whale does. It's just like if I was communicating to a whale or a dolphin, I would communicate the same way. As long as I cannot make a complicated thought and make a simple thing like hunger or blue, they will pick up on that. And that's how they influence us too, by putting simple thoughts in our minds. But yes, they can communicate. And of course, they can communicate with animals too, since animals are naturally telepathic. But you see, we have to, if we want to communicate with them, we have to be considerate of that and try to also be telepathic or do things that they naturally do, like they're drawn to those colors I mentioned. So put those out to show them that in some way you're trying to communicate with them. They also see us, and technically we can see them. We just deliberately don't, but we can easily be taught to see them.
Right.
But they see us basically the way we are, as if we were them, because we're not just a physical being. We're also etheric, like they are. We're also astral, like where we go at night when we sleep, and the energy we go to in heaven. We call those different bodies, too, like heavenly body or astral body or etheric body. So they tend to see the etheric part of us, but they still see us just the way we look now, but from their perspective, right? It's also why if we feed them, like we want to give them a cookie or a milk, which is a common thing people
it's like
do.
We do that with Santa Claus,
yeah,
don't we?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but nature spirits like bakery goods. You know, they love their butter and their bread and their milk and things like that. Okay, they're like little children. And of course, St. Patrick's Day, it's a beer, right?
That's right.
But they see and experience the etheric part of it, which is matter. All matter we have is also surrounded with etheric matter and astral matter and heavenly matter and four other planes also. So every atom has a part of it that's existing in other realms, but we just have a focus or perspective here on this physical one, right? So humans, being arrogant as we are, we only seem to recognize what we perceive physically, but there are other parts of it. So the nature spirits experiencing the etherical part of us, or let's say food, the example we were using, they also pick up different properties because of that. So, for example, we mentioned beer. So they may be drawn to beer and spirits around St. Patrick's Day, but it has a different effect on them etherically than the material version would have on us in the physical. See? So on their side, that beer or spirits actually raises their vibration higher. It's like raising their consciousness. We're here, it sort of dumbs us down, I guess, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The website? mistoftheoracle.com. You still have that, right?
Yes, we do. Okay. It's been going on a long time, hasn't it?
It sure has. My gosh, how many years have we been talking now?
10 years, I think.
Can you believe that?
Yeah.
Goes by fast.
The gnomes are getting older.
They are. Now, the gnomes and the leprechauns also help people find their soulmate, don't they?
Well, they do, because remember, let me go back a second.
Hold on for a sec. We're going to hit the break, but that's a thought I want everybody to hold, because if you're looking for someone, they might be able to help you. So we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And again, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Just go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, to do that. Well, if you live in the Vancouver, British Columbia area, or you want to sneak across the border with a passport, come to my event. You can get full details by going to the events at the top of the homepage at coasttocoastam.com. Scroll down to the Vancouver event, June 6th, and come on by. Tickets are going like crazy, but they still got a few good seats left. I'd love to see you out there. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Christian von Lehr with us, of course, with his clairvoyant abilities. How did you get these abilities, Christian? Did you develop them or did you just have them?
Yeah, I just had them. Actually, it's called being born psychic or natural psychic. A lot of people do develop them, but it's not the same as when you're born with them, George. When a person is a natural psychic, it meant that in their prior lifetimes, they'd spent a great deal of time using the psychic arts, so to speak, to help people to heal, to solve problems, to do all the things that we use medicine and science and things like that to do now. So we also were like oracles, and we decided who was going to win a battle, and we would tell this king, you're going to win, the other one's going to lose. So the king would just give him his scepter, okay? So it was a natural means that we used in the past, and we kept that up. So when you're born again in this physical life as a natural psychic, you hit the road running with these abilities, although it's not always comfortable as a child because we don't tend to filter. We see all sorts of things from different realms, which we don't tend to see right now.
Soulmates. Give me your definition of what a soulmate is.
Well, soulmates are something that are derived from a prior type of life. Back a long time ago, about 200 million years ago, the world, all of it, was peopled like it is now, but the people were Atlanteans. They would look like glass to us now. They would be so less dense compared to us. And so the Atlantean people actually achieved everything in their life. They went through all levels of their existence. We're only at the start of ours. So they completed it. But being lighter beings than we are, their life was very emotional. It's a totally emotional existence. So Atlantean life was about singing, dancing, painting, creativity, colors, every emotion imaginable, and of course, love. Since they went through every level of their development, they perfected love, and since it was a long existence, 200 million years, we developed a lot of people that we were in love with. And so, reaching the end of Atlantean life, we sort of look for an agreement. Can we start bringing in these people in the next kind of life, which is what we've done? So when we bring in soulmates in this lifetime, they are people we have known in Atlantean life millions of years ago.
And in what capacity did we know them? Were they friends? How close were we to them?
Well, of course, we would have gone through the phase of friends and maybe family, but eventually we would have become lovers, because the purpose of the Atlantean life would have been, of course, to understand what love really is. And it's a bigger thing than we interpret it. It's like the leprechauns, by the way. They see love differently. They see it as balance and harmony, a perfection, so to speak, of energy. And so that would have been the highest state of emotion in Atlantean life. And so they help us try to find soulmates here to get us back in balance and to find the harmony we want in our existence. But the agreement with soulmates is that we could do better if we could carry on what we had going on the past, where we could only achieve just love. Now we will take that love with the soulmates we've known from the past and start developing each other in new ways. So the agreement actually is that we will grow together. We want to go through life again with you, but we want to learn new things. And you're going to help me, and I'm going to help you. But I am naturally associated with you. I understand you innately, and you understand me. So it's a partnership that we've agreed to have happen.
With these soulmates, a lot of people will say, I have found my soulmate. They get married, and then something happens. They get divorced. Was that person really the soulmate?
No, not usually in that case. The soulmate process, George, is kind of complicated. It was well known in the past, and that's why even around the 1200s we had arranged marriages, right? Remember arranged marriages?
Yes.
Did you know those actually used to work out?
They did work.
That's because great-great-grandmother, who also happened to live at home back then, actually became clairvoyant. We all do after around age 72. So we actually start seeing the easiest things. The easiest thing to see clairvoyantly is what a person's path is, what they're supposed to do in life, because you're on the same path from lifetime to lifetime. That big path. The other thing that's easy, because it's destiny as well, is who we want to attract into this life. And so soulmates are part of that destiny thing. So it's easy to see those.
You know, my parents were matched up. Their parents said, these are the two that you two want to get together, you two. And they did. And until he passed away, they stayed married, 60-some years.
So the word you said, matched, is what we're looking for here. And that's what God of the universe is actually trying to do, because we have many soulmates. Remember, that Atlantean life I mentioned was 200 million years old. So we've developed a lot of love affairs, right? And be taken to the nth degree in Atlantean life. So here we have many available to us. They're only presented three at a time. One being more romantic of the three, one being more simpatico, and one being more security-oriented of the three, but there's still all of those abilities. And so the universe picks the three of the many to make them available to you in this lifetime, what it considers the best match. Now, we can exceed the three, by the way. But between the ages, say, 7 and 10, when humans start to develop a reasoning ability, we develop synapses in the brain so we can actually reason. By that time, we have already established who we're going to be in this lifetime. We don't really change much. All of us are technically 10 years old inside in our subconscious, so to speak. And so by that time, when we start to reason, the universe has already decided, okay, these are the three that we're going to try and match you up. So they have to use the various means available to the universe to get you to know who that soulmate is. And leprechauns, to bring them back into the subject, know that too. And so they create things, little magical things going on around you, like you find things or hear the same word all the time, or you're drawn to go to Egypt all the time. All these patterns are their way of trying to draw your focus to what you said should occur if I'm going to find my soulmate. In other words, there's a plan when we find a soulmate. We have to meet the specific person. They have to look and act a certain way. They have to be dressed a certain way. They have to be a certain age. They have to be at a precise location, though, or a generalized precise location. Mm-hmm. And the problem with soulmates, why, like you mentioned, some people don't stay together, is you have to be the person you agreed to be before you were born, because we forget everything the moment we're born, right? So the agreement occurs beforehand, and we're telling this soulmate, Mary, you need to look for me. I'm going to be 6'2". I'm going to be speaking about spiritual things, for example. I'm going to be a great psychic, and I'm going to be an author. I talk this way. So all these characteristics we agree to, and we find that as we go through life, you and I and everyone, we're drawn to peculiar things, these quirks we have, like your interest in the subjects on your radio show. We're drawn to those things because technically what we're really looking for beneath all this is soulmates. That's what it's about.
They just had a study that I had during the news hour, Christian, that said that lonely people generally will live 30% less time than somebody who's not lonely.
Right.
That's bizarre.
Yeah. That's futility. See, when we know innately, because again, we have a higher self that we can check with, even though it's subliminally, we know innately what our life was supposed to be, what should have been in it. And that's why we have our quirks and our desires, and why we're interested in certain people and certain places. It's already sort of built in us as a little repertoire or a library. And we think we just like to do these things, but it was part of the plan. It's like the paints in our paint set, so to speak. So we're supposed to respond to those things, and then by nature, we should then find our soulmate. But we live in a pretty complicated world now, George, and so everything distracts us. We don't even think the way we used to think back when your mom and dad got together, or back in the 1200s, especially since churches went around the world with colonists, right, and they told people how to start thinking. So we've actually gotten away from the process, the natural process of finding love and soulmates.
Does everyone have a soulmate?
Everybody has a soulmate. Everybody has many of them. It doesn't mean that everybody finds them. You know, back when we were talking about the great grandmother, the odds of finding your soulmate or her finding your soulmate for you was about 90%. That's why arranged marriages work. But today, you know how low it is? It's 2%.
2%?
2%. So most people find what we call closure people. Really, it's a pattern. They're drawing the same pattern of people over and over again, and they don't get beyond that stage. But technically, we have to go through a middle stage before we even find the soulmate, and that's called, we call that an ego person in this realm. And so we find it in our minds. I want someone that's 6'9", and they have blonde hair, and they do this or that. Those interests that we have, we can actually find that as a person, and we will like everything about that person, George, although we won't necessarily feel like we're in love. But we have to go through what the mind wants before we can finally achieve the soulmate. So it's a complicated three-step process to find the soulmate. That's just pertaining to the people. Then we have to do certain things.
Is there an instantaneous click?
Boy, there is. It's just amazing. You know, it's also possible, George, and it's funny to watch, because I've seen it many times, to find all three of those soulmates at the exact same time.
then what do you do?
Well, it happened to me, and I watch it with other people, and all you can do is kind of laugh, because their focus is on getting you, that they want to get you, right? So you're able to observe what's going on, and you see all the machinations that they're going through to win your favors, so to speak, and how they compete. So it's kind of a funny thing.
So as a clairvoyant, as a medium, as a psychic, you use these abilities, of course, to help other people and yourself. Has it ever gone awry?
I'll have to think about that. I don't think so. But I want to just talk about one thing you mentioned there. It's harder for a psychic, clairvoyant medium to help themselves with their abilities than it is to help others.
Really? How come?
Because of the mind. The humans, remember I said we evolved from Atlanteans to the current human state?
Yeah.
And before that, there would have been Lemurian and Hyperborean. Okay. And we're different in all those kinds of life. So right now, we're the thinker. So the brain is running everything. Those thoughts are the strongest energy that a human emanates. And that's programmed by the world around us, right, since we're growing up. So our thoughts get in the way.
They get in the way. They kind of block you, don't they?
That's right. If I'm thinking, that's why it's hard for psychics to be on a talk show, like the late night talk shows, because the host would want them to do something psychic between the two of them, but the host's mind is so busy that it's hard for the psychic to pick up those subtle things. Okay, so to us, reading ourselves or working with ourselves, there are a gazillion things going on in my mind. For me, right, any nuance I pick up, I actually have a mental thought about it. So it tends to get in the way. I will say I've overcome a lot of that, and it's probably better than most people. But I've learned where the problem is. It's the thinking. So even like if someone's pursuing yoga or meditation, we say things like quiet the mind. That's what we're trying to get you to do, is to try and not think, just act instinctively or naturally. And that's like when I do my sessions with people, at the time I'm doing those clairvoyant readings with people, I'm not thinking technically. I'm just talking as fast as I can, because the more I can just move my lips, the less I will think, and everything will come out naturally.
It just flows.
That's right, and you're picking up the influences around you.
The thinking tends to...
Thinking blocks.
Block things, yeah.
That's right. That's why you probably on your show, too, you've seen this. So many people say, geez, I was so psychic when I was younger, but I've lost it now. I have a block. Well, the block is simply that they know too much now, and they're thinking too much and qualifying everything, right? And like in this process, to even do psychism or clairvoyance, even mediumship, when things come through, I can't question them. I just got to say, this happened, or this is what's said, this is what they're wearing, this is what I feel they're coming from. Well, I can't buffer it in any way.
It's remarkable how it works, though.
Yeah, and actually, most psychics that you experience today are actually developed ones. Or in other words, they're learning it. So it's hard for them to relate to the natural ability I'm talking to. But I can go back to my childhood when I just sort of knew things. Like 9 years old, I saw what I was going to be doing now. Like I was run over like 10, 15 years ago, and all the doctor said was, you're going to die. You know, you're just run over.
For real, you were run over?
For real, right. And I was laughing at them in the hospital, and they couldn't understand why. And I says, I'm ready to go. Let me out here. They say, you got to stay here. You may not make it. I says, no. Since I was 9, I see exactly what I'm going to be doing, the books I'm writing, that type of thing. So that's a natural form of psychism and clairvoyance. But it's a knowingness. It's so certain and so real. I have no doubt about those things.
That's amazing work. So as you've been doing this, as you've been evolving, is it get even stronger for you?
Surprisingly, it does. I keep thinking that there's an end, but there's new facets to it. Like, it's better to look at psychism or clairvoyance or mediumship, too, as if it was a diamond, George. So we can look at a diamond and just think it's an angled, shiny thing, but technically it has all these different facets to it, right? So psychism or clairvoyance is even better, has different perspectives or different means available to it that we have to grow into. So we start off with whatever's natural for us. And like, let's see, at first I would just know things, and then I would see images, like John Edwards does it all the time. I see a rose, or I see this. So sort of an inanimate object. But now I see full-length movies. And I know things from 14 different perspectives. Like someone could be talking to me from the other side, I'm conveying the message, but I'm also feeling what they're feeling behind it, or I know that that was caused by something in their own childhood. See, so this, 'cause there's more dimensions to the other realm that we call psychism, which comes from the astral plane. The other side's the astral plane. It's also where psychism comes from. But there's 14 dimensions to that world, George. We only have three here. So if we connect with them, we could pick up a lot more information than we would talking to someone here, see?
How close are your abilities to that of Edgar Cayce's?
Well, I consider Edgar Cayce's in my life, in a way, kind of similar. You know, he was very interested in the old ancient wisdom and the old theosophies and the old, even the old Buddhism, Jainism, the old schools of thought, right? And all the old archaeological places, which I am too. So we had a lot of commonality there. He was very predictive, though, and he had a focus that would be different than mine. My focus is actually trying to help people be where they're supposed to be in life. So when someone sits down with me, doesn't matter what they think they're going to be there for, I want to clean up any issue that's going on with them in life so they achieve happiness and they're further along the path. He was predictive more about history and what's going to happen, so we had a different focus. See, I think the quality is the same. The accuracy is probably the same. It's just that we do it a different way for a different purpose.
Interesting tech. People want to get a hold of you, Christian, through your website?
Sure, that would be the best way.
And how about the books? Where are they available?
We're selling them through, you can get them on Amazon, but we're selling them through the website. It's a better price because thanks to your show, by the way, the books have been so popular that people are charging outrageous prices for them. It's hard to believe, right?
They're making a profit on you, huh?
Sometimes $400 for a book. So you can still get them at the regular price through us.
That is amazing. Amazing indeed. And what are your future work projects?
Okay. I am working on a screenplay. I just have to get
that. Who are you?
I am. I have to do that. You know, it's going to be a musical screenplay. To do it, though, I went through the process of writing the software to help manage it because I haven't liked what's out there. So that was sort of a two-year delay. I am going to be writing more books on soulmates and health, by the way, health with the nature spirits, and probably some more things on the nature of existence. So I'll probably be doing more writing, but I got to get that screenplay out, right? Everyone's got to do that. I've done the directing and the producing, but I want to actually do the writing, too.
That'll be exciting work for you, too.
Yeah.
It will be. I want to take calls next hour. People will probably ask you for some personal advice. Do you want to do that too or not?
Sure, it's not a problem for me. As long as I can say what comes up.
Yeah, you sure can. I mean, will you tell somebody if you see death in their life?
I will. But technically the way this process works, George, and it'll be true even with your show, is since the universe wants us to work at our highest ability, it'll try to make it positive. So normally we will draw people that will be supportive as opposed to counter.
Explain that.
Well, for example, I could get lots of hecklers, for example, but I won't tend to get all those. I'll get people with genuine interest in the subject matter I'm speaking
right,
to,
right.
Because I'm really on my path doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Have you ever had a heckler at an event?
Sure.
You have. Rude, yeah. Rude or just questioning?
Normally it's a question. They want to disbelieve. But actually, I do better with hecklers, frankly. I kind of love it. It makes the show go better as far as I'm concerned. Because there's some disbelief that they have, right? So if we can correct it with information or prove otherwise for them, then in a sense they become a convert, right?
We had one heckler at an event I was at hosting a panel during the Mayan calendar date.
Uh-huh.
And he almost rushed the stage, didn't quite come up there, but he was not a happy camper, I'll tell you that.
Well, I don't actually have to suffer that much. There was one in the LAX convention, which you've been to before.
Yeah.
I had one strange one there. The show was going so well. I was talking for about 2 hours on, I think, the nature of existence. And she was so convinced I was the greatest psychic in the world, she just stands up and wants me to read her.
Right there.
And everything, what's going on with my life, whatever. I said, I can't really do that. I'm actually trying to teach people how to see aliens in this show.
Well, what she should have done was call the program and then have an opportunity to talk with you, too, and that's what we'll do next.